It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to the show, and happy Easter. Yes, it is Easter weekend, and I'm pretty excited. My best friend and his wife are getting baptized at their local church. I'm going to be there to see that, and I hope that you're able to spend some time thinking about the true meaning of Easter, because Easter Sunday is a day that truly changed everything in the Christian world. I also hope you might get to spend some time with family this weekend. That's another important part of Easter, and maybe with the kids or the grandkids too. This week on the show, we've got some great guests for you, but I've got to admit, between the Bassmaster Classic and Easter and all the travel in between, it was hard to find three guests. So we are reaching into our audio vault, pulling out a really interesting interview that we did a couple of years ago with PJ Delhomme. He wrote an article for Outdoor Life about trapping and whether this tradition is fading away or whether it's seeing a bit of a reinvigoration. After that, we've got two new guests for you. One of them is Cody Butler. He works with Henry Repeating Arms, and he helped put a YouTube video together that's on the Henry Repeating Arms channel right now. That's all about using single-shot shotguns for turkey hunting. Now, Henry's got a great turkey camo shotgun, but there are other shotguns that come in 410 gauge and 20 gauge can also be effective turkey guns. And Cody will tell you all about how to do that. He'll also give you some turkey hunting tips, too. After that, we're going to talk to Aaron Haybison. He is the Midwest Coordinator for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and the topic is going to be their upcoming annual rendezvous. Always a good time, and this year, for the first time, it's taking place in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A little easier to get to than some of the former locations where the rendezvous took place in Boise, Idaho and Missoula, Montana. And not only is there going to be a whole bunch of the great events that you always associate with the rendezvous and some wonderful seminars, our speakers, there's also going to be a turkey calling contest. And if you think that you can strut your stuff, so to speak, this might be a fun one for you to participate in. Before we talk to our guests, though, we've got some outdoors news for you. And this portion of the show is brought to you every week by our friends at WorkSharp. WorkSharp has got a whole line of kitchen sharpeners that'll come in really handy for you. Whether you are cutting up stuff on the counter or maybe on the back grill, you've got to have sharp knives. You know that. And the manual and electric knife sharpeners from WorkSharp will work just perfect for you. They come at different price points. They are very affordable, and they'll probably last you a lifetime. So check them out at quality sporting goods stores and hardware stores near you, or you can shop online anytime at WorkSharpTools.com. Our first story today is about a mountain lion attack in California. From Outdoor Life, we learn a 21-year-old man has died and his 18-year-old brother is recovering from multiple surgeries after the pair encountered a male mountain lion while shed antler hunting in El Dorado County, California, last weekend. And it's the first fatal mountain lion attack in the state since 2004. The two brothers were hunting for shed antlers northeast of Sacramento in an area called Georgetown. And after the attack occurred, the younger 18-year-old brother was able to call 911. Officers and paramedics arrived on scene, located the younger brother, and then discovered the older brother on the ground nearby. A male cougar was crouched beside the body. Officers fired shots to scare the big cat away, tried to administer aid to the older brother, but he was deceased. Officials from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and a El Dorado County trapper responded, and they located the mountain lion and dispatched it. DNA results confirm it is indeed the correct lion that they killed. The 18-year-old is expected to make a full recovery. And while mountain lion attacks are rare, they seem to be on the rise in recent years, especially on the West Coast. One reason for this is, of course, the fact that humans keep expanding into habitat where mountain lions roam. Another reason is that mountain lion populations are doing pretty darn well. In California, it hasn't been legal to hunt them since 1990. And in Oregon, where a fatal mountain lion attack occurred in 2018, and in Washington, where another fatal mountain lion attack occurred also in 2018, the use of hounds to hunt cougars has been outlawed since the 1990s as well. As a matter of fact, cougar attacks have been on the rise in Washington State. 2022, a 9-year-old in eastern Washington playing hide-and-seek outside a church camp was mauled by a mountain lion. And just this year, 4 mountain bikers were on a trail east of the Seattle metro area in an area around Fall City when one of the women bikers was attacked by a mountain lion and sustained significant injuries. Fortunately, Department of Fish and Wildlife officers were able to dispatch that cougar as well. So what do you do if you're recreating in cougar country? Well, the experts say that just like carry bear spray for bears, bear spray should work on cougars too. I've seen one or two instances where this seems to be the case. And if you encounter a cougar, never ever run. It triggers a predatory instinct. Instead, make yourself big, talk to the animal, and move slowly backwards and away. All right, let's move on to a happier subject, shall we?
It's time to talk record fish.
And the first record fish we're going to tell you about today was caught out of the mighty Mississippi River in the Show Me State of Missouri. According to the Missouri Department of Conservation, George Chance of Festus, Missouri is the latest state record holder and potentially a world record holder after catching a 97-pound big head carp from the Mississippi River. Chance was bank fishing for catfish with a bobbin crankbait when he hooked into the fish on March 19th. According to Chance, you kind of know what a fish is once you hook into it based on how it fights. It was moving pretty slow and I originally thought it was a flathead, but the more it fought, I saw its tail and knew it was some type of carp. I was able to hook him with a hay hook in order to get him out of the water. It looked to be at least 50 or 60 pounds. Well, it was a lot bigger than that. Like I said, it was 97 pounds, easily beating the previous record of 80 pounds for big head carp. It's a good thing he caught it. Chance said the carp was full of eggs and likely would have spawned this spring, and that's not a good thing because big head carp are an invasive fish from Asia, and the Missouri Department of Conservation encourages people to harvest carp to help remove them from Missouri rivers. Out of West Virginia, the Department of Natural Resources there announced that an angler has caught a state record bowfin on the Ohio River in Mason County. This bowfin measured 30.2 inches long, weighed 10.6 pounds, and was caught and released on March 12th by Lauren Noble from Leetart in Mason County. She was using a small crankbait. Noble's record bowfin was certified by a district biologist. News of her record-breaking catch comes less than a week after the West Virginia DNR announced that state record red-breast sunfish and tiger trout were caught at New Creek Lake in February. A record blue catfish also was caught on the Ohio River in December of 2023. So, if you're looking for a place to go catch some big fish, maybe some records, head to West Virginia. It's going on there.
Congratulations on your new record.
Finally, congratulations are in order to Justin Hamner from Northport, Alabama for winning the Bassmaster Classic last weekend on Grand Lake in Oklahoma. Now, we had talked about who some of the odds-on favorites were, and definitely the one everyone expected to win was Jason Christie. He's from Oklahoma. He's fished Grand Lake very well in the past, and he's already won a Bassmaster Classic. However, while Jason did finish in the top 25, he only finished in 17th place. As for Justin Hamner, this young man led on all 3 days, ended up with a total weight of 58 pounds, 3 ounces, beating the second place angler, Adam Rasmussen, by nearly 3 pounds. And what did Justin win for his troubles? Oh, just a check for $307,000. That might help buy him a house if he hasn't bought one already. And if you're wondering where the Bassmaster Classic's going to be next year, it's going to be back in Texas, Lake Ray Roberts. Classic Anglers last competed there in 2021, and it's the place where I got to see my first Bassmaster Classic. I'm going to see if I can get back there for 2025. As for where the weigh-in's going to be, that'll be at the Convention Center in Fort Worth, and I have no doubt it will be rocking just like it was the last time I was there. Stick around, we've got more of the great outdoors coming your way right after this short word from our sponsors. Western Bass Anglers, time is running out to sign up for the Limit Out Marine Pro-Am and Big Bass tournaments coming up really soon. The deadline is April 21st to register for the Pro-Am, taking place April 25th and 26th at Potholes Reservoir in Eastern Washington. The winner of this event, if we get 100 boats, will win a brand new Phoenix Bass boat worth $50,000, and the amateur can win a $5,000 paycheck. Meanwhile, the Big Bass Contest, if we have 100 boats on May 4th and 5th at Potholes, the biggest bass will be worth $10,000, and there's hourly cash prizes too for the biggest bass weighed in every hour. Find out more and register today at BigBassTrail.com. We'll see you there.
Immerse yourself in a complete Alaska wilderness experience through Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Up to six of you will spend a week in a beautiful waterfront log home in a secluded cove. Every day is a new adventure. Go on a guided fishing trip or haul in a bounty of shrimp and crab. Visit a Native American village where totem poles are carved. Go on a whale or bear watching trip and return back to your very own place at the end of the day. Find out more about the Alaska Wilderness Experience at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com. When you think of WorkSharp knife and tool sharpeners, you probably think of sharpeners for the shop or the field, but WorkSharp has a whole lineup of sharpeners for the kitchen too. We're talking about everything from easy-to-use manual and electric knife sharpeners to ceramic honing rods, whetstones, and the new rolling knife sharpener, an innovative manual sharpener that will do wonders for your cutlery. Make sure there's never a dull moment in your kitchen. Check out the entire product line and order today at WorkSharpTools.com. That's WorkSharpTools.com.
Ready to step up to a quality-built rifle or shotgun that's a true classic? Check out Henry Repeating Arms, American-made. Find out more and order a free catalog today at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com.
Trapping. Let's talk about this as a tradition, and let's ask a question. Is trapping going away? Is it going to be extinct in our lifetime, or is it actually seeing a revival? One person who has researched this topic and wrote an article that you can read right now in the Traditions issue of Outdoor Life is PJ Delhomme, coming at us today from Missoula, Montana. PJ, great to have you on the air.
Hey, John. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This was really an interesting article to me, and when it comes to trapping, there's three things we need to talk about that I think drive it. So one of them are fur prices, and of course, when you're talking about prices, we're talking about supply and demand. Let's talk about, I mean, historically, everyone knows the American West was opened up because of trapping. You had fur trappers, specifically after beaver, that were making all sorts of money because there was such demand for beaver fur. But what about today? What kind of trapping is going on today, and what kind of prices are trappers getting?
Well, I'll cut through the chase for you. Trapping prices are through the floor. They're pretty bad. Not many people out there are trapping to make a living, per se, and we'll talk more about why they're trapping in a little bit. But trapping prices, they're a roller coaster, and it's been really interesting to look at the roller coaster and, as you mentioned, supply and demand, but it also is connected with geopolitics. I mean, when Russia or China are going through, you know, when oil's high, those countries have more money, they're buying more furs. So the price of fur goes up. When these countries have a revolution or they tank or the economy takes a dive, fur prices go down as well. So they're really interestingly interconnected with what's going on around the globe, really.
Very interesting. So commercial trapping, not doing so good. Recreational trapping, we'll talk about in a second. Something else that affects trapping is just this whole bias against trapping that you see here in the United States and European countries as well. I mean, if you're wearing a fur in town, there's a good chance somebody's going to throw some fake blood at you and yell at you. And there's actually anti-trapping campaigns that show up as ballot initiatives. In fact, trapping's been banned in California and Colorado. You would think that this attitude towards trapping would have a very negative effect on trapping itself.
Yeah, you're right. And I think a lot of that legislation comes from misunderstandings and ballot initiatives. But what I'm seeing and what I found in my research is the more people are educating themselves and being educated on the topic of trapping in general, the more that they seem to understand its purpose and why it exists and why, you know, not necessarily why people go out and do it themselves. That's another topic altogether. But the management use of trapping, whether it's predators or muskrats or beaver or whatever. I talked to my buddy Randy Newberg, and he is a CPA by trade, now a hunting personality. But he still has clients that want him to CPA clients that want him to come out and trap a beaver because they just planted $4,000 worth of aspen on their property, and one spring or one fall a beaver came and took them all out.
Oh wow!
So he's it's really fascinating that everybody's anti-trapping until they have a problem. And so what you get in a lot of the popular media is that Fido gets caught in an illegal trap or snare and it makes headlines and everybody says, oh, this is a terrible thing. And it was a terrible thing to see Fido get killed or injured. But then again, it's like, especially if it's an illegal trap, but there are rules and regulations that trappers follow and places where trapping is completely legit and it serves a meaningful management purpose.
Well, you kind of have hinted at some of that when it comes to habitat destruction by both beavers and muskrats. Certainly predator control, whether it be wolves in Idaho, where there's a robust trapping program because they have a robust population of wolves, or coyotes. You see trapping of coyotes all over the West because coyotes take out a lot of livestock, and those numbers need to be pared down too. So you're right, trapping definitely has its place. Let's talk about recreational trapping. This was a huge surprise to me. I would have thought, given everything we just discussed in terms of bad prices and anti-trapping bias, that numbers would be way down, but they've gone up.
Yeah, and that was when I was assigned this article by Alex, my editor out there over there at Outdoor Life. He basically came to the table with that premise. And I said, okay, let me look at it. Let me see what happens. So I started calling around and talking with folks, and it was just the opposite. And, some people, thought it was a COVID bump. Everybody got bored. Everybody was curious. They were at home. They were on the internet and looking at YouTube videos and looking for ways in which they could pass the time outside. Hunting and fishing saw a bump too, but even trapping, even one fellow I talked to from Idaho, he mentioned he's a hunter education instructor and a trapping instructor. His name is Bill Siebold. And he mentioned that there's some of these shows on TV now that are really putting trapping in a different light than the popular conception. Shows like Alone,
right,
where you see people who are emotional about snaring these rabbits. And, killing an animal, it should be an emotional thing. You're making meat. You're making food. You're taking one animal's life to provide for yourself. And so they're like, oh, wow, these aren't bloodthirsty killers. They're out there just, surviving, and trapping and snaring these animals is one way to go about doing it. And also there's the whole locavore movement, which is great. And even the craft movement, we got craft beers and craft this, craft that, but people are starting to take the fur and make things off of them and make things out of the fur. And he mentioned, maybe you might get $20 for a pelt, but then again, if you make something out of that pelt, maybe you get $200 for it on Etsy or whatever.
Wow. Very interesting stuff. And folks, you're going to not believe this, but PJ found out in terms of how many people are trapping today in America, that number is somewhere between 210 and 260,000 people, way more than I ever thought. And it just goes to show that trapping is not going away. It's not going extinct. It's here to stay, and it's growing every year. PJ, well done on this article in the current edition of Outdoor Life. Folks, I would encourage you to read it. Just go to outdoorlife.com and either subscribe for the digital edition or just buy the digital edition for this month. It's the Traditions issue, and check this article out and other ones about trapping too. PJ, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thanks, John.
Speaking of traditions with a lot of history, we've got to talk about our friends at Henry Repeating Arms. They've been around since 1861, making quality lever-action rifles right here in America. They started here in America. They're still made in America. And you've heard about the supply chain issues. Now is the time to buy a Henry Repeating Arms rifle if you want it under the Christmas tree. That's right. It's only October, but you better order now. and the place to go to. Your first stop is henryusa.com. Once you're there, browse through the over 200 models they have available there. A lot of them, especially those Tribute Edition rifles, they are absolutely gorgeous. They're all rugged, they're all reliable, they're all accurate. I guarantee you, whoever gets a Henry from you is going to be a very happy person this Christmas. One more time, that's henryusa.com. Find a dealer near you. If you have any questions, contact the award-winning customer service staff. And don't forget to ask for your free decals and catalog, too, at henryusa.com.
Camp Chef, we've been in pursuit of one thing for 30 years, more flavor. And now we've taken the same bold hardwood flavor you've come to love in our pellets and applied it to our new line of hardwood spices. With three classic flavors, hickory, char cherry, and competition blend, you can now apply that hardwood flavor directly to your meat. Available in coarse or fine ground. I mean, you put crushed up plants on your food. So you tell me, is this crazy? Genius.
Hunt of a Lifetime is a nationwide nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under who suffer from life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. These adventures make big differences in the lives of those who participate in them, and in many cases are literally a dream come true that brings hope and therapy to their lives. Find out more, get involved, or donate today at huntofalifetime.org. That's huntofalifetime.org. huntofalifetime.org.
Welcome back to America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Turkey hunting season is upon us. And that's why we've got Cody Butler on the line. He's been working with Henry Repeating Arms for, about 5 years now. And if you go to their YouTube channel, Henry Repeating Arms, you're going to see a video he just put out about converting Henry's single-shot shotguns in 20-gauge and 410 into some very good turkey guns. Cody, welcome to the show.
How's it going? Glad to be here.
It's going quite well, but I want to start off with the question about the 20-gauge and the 410. Most people use a 12-gauge shotgun. Is a 410 even viable as a turkey gun?
You know, a few years ago, I would have said no. But here recently, you know, with the technologies we have in the newer tungsten super shots, TSS, turkey loads, the custom turkey loads that are out there now, 410 has really become kind of a fad in the turkey industry and just the hunting industry in general. It's a lot of fun. I know I've enjoyed getting into it. And I tell you, that TSS just really turns a 410 into quite the little turkey shotgun. And one thing that I like about it, you know, being a 410, it's not going to be too hard on your shoulder. You can kind of get it in anybody's hands. You know, maybe somebody that, you know, has never turkey hunted before or never shot a firearm that has a pretty good amount of recoil. They're going to feel comfortable with it. Kids, women, just small statured people. And even for me, who's used a 12 gauge for most of his life, I kind of just enjoy not getting my shoulder blown off sometimes.
Oh, I get it. You know, it's funny. My very first shotgun when I was a kid, when I went out duck hunting, single shot 410. It wasn't a Henry, but you know, it did the job for the first year I was hunting. I actually dropped a few birds. And so,
you know, it's funny you say that. One of my very first shotguns was also a single shot 410. And man, I did a lot of dove hunting and upland hunting with that thing, and really taught me to be a good shot on that first shot.
Oh, absolutely. You didn't have a choice.
Oh, exactly.
Let's talk about converting these shotguns, these, you know, just wood stock single shot shotguns in 20-gauge and 410 into turkey guns. You dropped this video that's got some really good accessories you add on there. Why don't we start off with the sleeve that you have on the back of the stock?
Yeah, so those are from Beartooth Products, I believe. One nice thing, obviously you got one shot on board on a single shot, so it's kind of nice to have some shells close to you there if you need to reload for any reason. So they're kind of just a neoprene deal. It kind of slides over your stock and allows you to hold a few extra shells there. You know, I grew up on a single shot, as you said you did, and I've gotten pretty decent at reloading pretty fast on a single shot. And, you know, just having that shell right there is really nice. Another couple things that I've done is Hi-Viz, and I believe True Glow makes one too. They make just a snap-on fiber optic sight. It basically just snaps right onto your barrel up by your brass bead. For turkey hunting, that can be really nice because, you know, say you're getting close to the roost or something in the mornings, and, you know, that bird flies down right close to legal shooting time. Sometimes in the timber, that brass bead can be hard to see in lower light conditions, so it's nice to have a fiber optic up there. It's not quite as precise as if you had, adjustable ones, but it definitely does the job. And then for all the single-shot Henrys are threaded, so you can put whatever choke you want. In my 20-gauge, I have a Carlson choke tube in there, and that's kind of what's patterned the best with the TSS that I'm shooting.
And the choke tubes, are you basically using full choke?
No, they're going to be what I would call a turkey choke. You can, I'm sure a full choke would work in some situations. I'm not exactly sure what the constriction is on my 20 gauge and my 410. Basically what I do is just, I'll get two or three different ones and pattern them with the shells that I'm using and pick the one that works best for me.
All right. So for all of you out there who have a single shot 20 gauge or 410, either for yourself or your kids, here's some great advice on upgrading it so it's ready for turkey season. Now, Henry Repeating Arms also makes the turkey camo gun, single shot.
Yep.
In mossy oak camo, and it's got just about all of the accessories minus the neoprene sleeve that you just mentioned, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty much ready to go out of the box. It's got some really nice adjustable fiber optic sights. It's got the rear sight and the front sight, so you can really dial that in. That's really nice, especially if you are shooting some of the newer TSS tungsten super shot type loads that are, you know, they're really tight patterns if you get your gun shooting right. And, you know, you can reach out. I've shot them out to 50, 60, 70 yards. And, I mean, they're with a 12 gauge, they're lethal out to that distance. But when you bring that pattern back to, say, 15 or 20 yards, your margin for error isn't quite good as it used to be with a shotgun as far as your, you know, your pattern's very tight. So you want to make sure your sights are definitely on where they need to be so you're not shooting left or right or under or over that turkey's head.
All right, so pattern that shotgun first and then use that single shot turkey camo shotgun to go ahead and bring down your gobbler. And by the way, folks, as we've mentioned every week on the show, all of Henry Repeating Arms firearms are made right here in America. They are all rugged, reliable, accurate out of the box, and they come with a lifetime satisfaction guarantee. You can check out what we've just mentioned at henryusa.com. Let's talk about your turkey hunting. You live in Nebraska. It's not a state that I normally associate with turkeys. What kind of turkeys do you have? What kind of terrain do you hunt in?
You know, we have pretty much everything here in the state of Nebraska. It's actually a pretty sought-after state for turkeys. For that reason, if you go to the eastern side of the state, you know, we do run into some eastern turkeys over in that area. Where I live here, kind of in the south central part, we do have what we call a lot of hybrids, a lot of mixtures of different things. Kind of everything blends together right here. You go just a little bit west of here, you'll even run into some Merriams. Go just a little bit east of here, you're going to run into easterns. You go south, you got Rios. So we get a lot of hybrid turkeys right here around this area. Most of them, I would say, are probably Rio hybrids. We don't see a ton of Merriams right here, but we are starting to see a few more easterns here and there. Now you go to the western part of the state, you know, clear out west in the panhandle, and then you're running into mostly Merriams out there. So you can really come to Nebraska and find pretty much everything but the Osceola, which is mostly just found in the state of Florida. So it's a pretty cool state. I'm right here on the Kansas border. We do have land in Kansas as well, so I can run down there. We got mostly Rios down there. So it's just kind of a cool area to live as far as turkeys go, that's for sure.
What's the daily limit on turkey in Nebraska?
You know, I'm not sure. I want to say they changed it this year, maybe. And I could be wrong on that, but in the past, for most of my life, it's been three turkeys. You've been able to kill three, two in Kansas. But if you've kind of been following the turkey population across the country. There has been some factors that have cut into that, and we do have some states that are trying to help out as far as lowering number of tags, making it a little harder for out-of-state people to come in and get tags as well. Most of the reason, from what I have seen, for the decline in turkeys is nest predators. I think that's a huge part of it. You know, trapping, there's just not a lot of people that trap like they used to. Fur prices aren't where they used to be. It's just kind of a different world we live in now. And I think, you know, like the raccoons, possums, skunks, things like that that are nest-raiding predators, you know, they're on the rise, taking out a lot of nests and different things. You've got coyotes, foxes, bobcats on the rise as well. They're taking out adult turkeys. So it is good to see some states. I've heard some states even putting bounties on different nest predators and things like that. So if you can, get out there on your places and do some trapping and some hunting for predators, because you're going to definitely help the population. But it's something that's kind of been a hard thing across the entire United States, and I hope we can get that remedied a little bit, because I know I love turkey hunting as well as a lot of other people, and I'd like to see them continue to grow and not decline.
I'm with you on that. Folks, if you want to find out more about turkey, place to go to is nwtf.org. That's the National Wild Turkey Federation. And if you want to check out the shotguns that Henry Repeating Arms has available for you for turkey hunting and other hunting as well, just go to henryusa.com. And don't forget to ask for your free decals and catalog while you're there. Colby, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
Hunt of a Lifetime is a nationwide nonprofit organization dedicated to providing hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under who suffer from life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. These adventures make big differences in the lives of those who participate in them, and in many cases are literally a dream come true that brings hope and therapy to their lives. Find out more, get involved, or donate today at huntofalifetime.org. That's huntofalifetime.org. huntofalifetime.org.
I'm Anthony Imperato, president of Henry Repeating Arms. Patriotic Americans are looking to protect and provide for their families, now more than ever. Henry has over 200 rifles and shotguns to choose from, made in America or not made at all, and backed by a lifetime guarantee. Go to henryusa.com and order our free catalog, decals, and a list of dealers in your area. That's henryusa.com. Thank you, and God bless America.
Come explore the Dalles in Oregon for outdoors fun. Hike amongst the wildflowers, bike our riverfront trail, or visit the Gorge Discovery Center where you can enjoy a live raptor display, or even check out our National Neon Sign Museum. But don't forget the fishing. We've got salmon, steelhead, bass, walleye, and monster-sized sturgeon waiting just for you. When the day is done, tell those tall tales at one of our wineries, breweries, or restaurants, and plan your next adventure. Find out more at explorethedalles.com.
Attention, small business owners. This could be the most important 10-minute call you will ever make. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Call Omega Accounting Solutions to see if your business is eligible to recover payroll tax paid during the pandemic. All it takes is a quick, easy, free 10-minute consultation to determine your qualifications. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-309-ERC. Omega's knowledgeable staff will streamline the process of filing complicated paperwork. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of this exclusive small business tax credit before it's too late. The 3-year sunset deadline is setting soon. So find out if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredits.com.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got Haybison on the line. He is the regional coordinator in the Midwest for backcountry hunters and anglers. And the Midwest is the place to be on April 18th through the 20th, specifically Minneapolis, Minnesota, because the annual rendezvous for backcountry hunters and anglers will be taking place there. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John.
I've been to several BHA rendezvous before. They've always been out west. The first one I attended was in Spokane. I attended several in Boise. I know in recent years they've been in Missoula. Why did they choose Minneapolis this year?
Yeah, so over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years, you know, as BHA has grown outside of the west, we've had a lot of input from folks who weren't able to make it to those western rendezvous that said, yeah, we'd really like to make it to a rendezvous, but, you know, that's just too far. I can't pull that off. But we have really great public lands in other parts of the country. And so we kind of analyzed that and said, okay, let's see if we can move this. What's another area that has excellent outdoor recreation opportunities, but let's be honest, a little bit easier to travel to? It's a little bit tough to get to Missoula sometimes, or some of the smaller airports. So the Minneapolis area has, you know, 2.5 million people, and it's a large, like I said, outdoor rec community, but it's also pretty easy to travel to from anywhere in the country. So that's why, you know, when we put the bid in a couple of years ago and Minneapolis was chosen, we were just over the moon that was an opportunity for us to, in the Midwest, you know, show that BHA is not just a Western organization, but that we've got this excellent public land recreation in other parts of the country. And so, yeah, let's celebrate it.
Well, Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. Minneapolis is certainly a very easy hub to reach by air. Where exactly is the rendezvous taking place in Minneapolis?
Yeah, it'll be at the Minneapolis Convention Center, which is basically right downtown, probably about 15, 20 minutes from the airport. Lots of lodging options around, as well as other nightlife activities that people could do. There's zoos, there's sporting events. You're coming at the right time that there's a lot of other activities that people could enjoy while they're also in town.
So let's talk about some of the events happening at the rendezvous this year. A lot of them are traditional, have been going on for several years, like the Field to Table Dinner. Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, so the Field to Table Dinner is a wild game, a 4 or 5 course dinner with high-ranking chefs from around the country, from Florida, from Minnesota, from out west, and, you know, really kind of covering the gambit on different types of wild game dishes. So it's, like I said, a 4 or 5 course wild game dinner where folks can, you know, get together and share their stories, but also get an incredible meal and an opportunity to kind of rub elbows with some of the, let's say, higher dollar type of experience. You know, definitely a little bit more expensive per plate, but you're getting a really incredible experience out of that opportunity.
Oh, folks, I was lucky enough to attend as a media member, and they took pity on me and let me eat there at one of the rendezvous in Boise, and the food is absolutely delicious. We're talking about some top-rated chefs are preparing your meals here, and they are indeed delicious. So let's talk about some of the other events happening. I know you always have a whole bunch of seminars for some really good experts.
Yeah, so we've got a good range of seminars this year, ranging from everything from advocacy and policy engagement that BHA is involved in, really telling people about the work that we're doing, both on the policy side, working on different stewardship projects, as well as some of those more skills and entertainment level type of seminars. One which that I'm very excited about this year is that the Minnesota DNR is going to be doing a presentation on how to extract the lymph nodes out of deer. So they've got a 3D sculpture of a deer head that's going to show you how to pull the lymph nodes out of a deer and then send those samples in for CWD testing. So that a person can go out into the field with the deer harvest and not only have the know-how and the tools, but then know how to, you know, be part of that citizen science and contribute back to that ecology.
Now, is the wild game cook-off happening again, where different chapters compete to provide a great meal for the judges out there?
certainly is. Yeah, that's become kind of a keynote event for us within Rendezvous. And I don't think anybody had the idea that it was going to be as popular as it's become. But it pits chapters against each other. There's this year 12 different chapters competing in the Wild Game Cook-Off. Every chapter brings some either caught, harvested, foraged ingredients from their own state. And they've got a one-hour timeline to cook a meal on a jet boil camp grill. And then they'll present that after their one-hour time to a panel of judges. Excellent panel of judges this year that definitely has some know-how in the kitchen. And so I know that Washington has, I think, is currently the title holder. So, and Minnesota had won it a couple years previous to that. So there's some good competition, and it always brings a pretty incredible list of ingredients to that event. I mean, I've seen everything from mountain lions to whale to doll sheep to, you know, some incredibly cooked, you know, more, I guess, let's say a little bit more common catfish, ducks, you know, really crabs across the nation. Some really incredible dishes that the teams bring.
Folks, in addition to this, there's going to be the Podcasts and Pints Meat Eater Trivia Night on Friday. There's a kids area because, you know, kids, we want to get them involved and get them motivated to be part of this as well. And there's going to be all sorts of exhibitors, too. Now, one thing that I'm very interested in is the Strutting and Clucking Calling Contest for turkey callers. Tell us about this.
Yeah, absolutely. The Strutting and Clucking Calling Competition was something that was born out of during COVID. We were able to have a in-person meetup during for Rendezvous for a couple of years, and so we had this virtual competition that we ran through social media, and now we're bringing it here in person. And so it's a calling competition for turkey callers. Anybody across the nation can come, can join in during that rendezvous, and we've got three divisions: a diaphragm or mouth calling division, a hand calling or friction division, so that's box calls, slate calls, wing bones, anything that you would use your hands for, and then a kids division. And with some, you know, incredible prizes from sponsors, we've got Vortex Optics on board, River Brothers Outfitters, who's a apparel company out of Minnesota, and then a couple others that I won't tease out too much, but some, yeah, really incredible prize packages for some folks. And we're going to run that as everyone is going to have a 30-second sequence that they will do their calling to a panel of judges, and then they'll be scored on that sequence, and then the top two competitors from each category will go head-to-head in a head-to-head competition, you know, in front of the crowd. So then being asked to present certain types of calls, gobbles, owl hoots, whatever have you.
This sounds like a really fun event to participate in if you consider yourself a good turkey caller, or just watch if you're not like me. What day or days is this taking place?
The turkey calling competition will happen on Saturday, April 20th at 11 o'clock. So right in the middle of the day, and that'll kind of be the warm-up, let's say, to that wild game cook-off competition that'll follow right after that turkey calling competition. So yeah, if you're a great caller or even brand new to it, it's meant to be fun, it's meant to be engaging, and if nothing else, it's a good opportunity for you to get there and come and talk to some other people who are excited about the turkey season. That's one thing that I'm really excited about, is that we chose to have this rendezvous during the opening weekend of Minnesota's turkey hunting season. So if folks are thinking about coming to Rendezvous, you can come, you can buy an over-the-counter tag for turkeys and hunt anywhere in the state. So it's a really good opportunity not only to get out and join the, check out the Rendezvous, but to come and, you know, maybe do some hunting and fishing while you're in town.
I love this idea. Folks, if you want to get tickets for the Rendezvous, the place to go is backcountryhunters.org. Just go to backcountryhunters.org. That is the website for backcountry hunters and anglers. Check out the North American Rendezvous page. Again, it's happening April 18th through the 20th at the Minneapolis Convention Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And as you just heard, there's a whole lot going on and a lot of good reasons to attend. So go ahead, get your tickets now. You can either get a full weekend ticket, or you can get day passes or event tickets. But whatever you do, make it a point to get to Minneapolis, Minnesota, April 18th through the 20th. This is kind of a can't-miss event. Aaron, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you.
Next on America Outdoors Radio, they continue to reel in the big ones this month. Yes, indeed. You know what time it is.
Record fish, anyone?
This time, our destination is Georgia, because the Georgia Department of Natural Resources announced a new state record for Almaco Jack. Hayden Mundy of Midway, Georgia, reeled in his Almaco Jack, weighing 19 pounds, 10.53 ounces, while fishing offshore on March 14th, shattering the previous record of 7 pounds and 0.7 ounces set by Sean Tarpley of Brunswick in October 2023. I remember reporting on that one because I'd never heard of Almaco Jacks before. Turns out Almaco Jacks are found globally in tropical and subtropical seas. They are pelagic fish, meaning they utilize the entire water column and are frequently found inhabiting reefs and other structures underwater. They typically feed on small fishes, shrimp, and squid, and they're known for their stamina and strength. Mundy's record-setting fish was caught in about 180 feet of water using a Daiwa Saltiga rod and reel with a slow-pitch jig on a tandem rig. He was aboard the private fishing vessel Legal Limit with Captain Jacob Lee when he landed the trophy fish.
Congratulations on your new record.
On that note, it is time to go. Once again, happy Easter to you and yours. He is risen. He is risen indeed. And I hope you get to spend some special time with family today.